Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Greetings, digital citizen. It is the Nerdist Podcast number 477. At midnight, we are in it, you guys. We have such amazing comedians coming up on the show. A lot of people that you've seen, of course, before on the show, but also some new people like Hannibal Buress is coming up on the show. We're doing a UCB-themed episode, so it'll be Matt Walsh, Matt Besser, and Ian Roberts on the same show. We have Jimmy Pardo coming up. Rob Delaney's coming on, Tommy Jonigan. We're doing a Community episode with Gillian Jacobs and Jim Rash and Danny Pudi, and Andy Daly's coming on. The show is, it's like my dream job. So please watch it at midnight. It's on Comedy Central right after Colbert, Monday through Thursday. And it's Jeopardy with dick jokes. So please, please, please watch it. I'd like to thank for sponsoring this episode of Nerds Podcast, Stamps.com, who has long kept this little boat afloat. Now, I don't know if you guys know, but postage is going up to 49 cents. Government! But if you have Stamps.com, you're going to get discounted postage. You will pay less than you would pay at the post office. It's easy to use. You have an account and you print it out from your computer. And then they just pick it up from your house. Stamps doesn't, but your mail carrier will. And even they will be like, yeah, you don't want to go to the post office. I'm there. And believe me, you don't want to be going there. So, Stamps.com, you're going to enter the promo code Nerdist. That means you're going to get a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and up to $55 of free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That is Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. This was a super fun episode. I had never really met... This is Topher Grace. I never really met him before. We both share different halves of the same name. And we had sort of nerd flirted on Twitter. And he seemed like a super cool guy. So we did a podcast. And he was. You know, It's not fair. He's handsome and articulate and nice and talented. And he's launching a new website today, actually, the day this podcast comes out, the 10th of February, whenever you're listening to this, 2014. Or if you're, thank you for visiting our planet. I'm just assuming that when aliens come to Earth, they're going to pick up podcasts. Or maybe they'll just nab it off the cloud, literally in the clouds. So, Cereal Prize is the name of the website. Cereal as in breakfast cereal. CerealPrize.com is really just, you know, Topher just kind of, he explains in the podcast, but just sort of had this idea like, oh, I just want to launch a website that's just about all the stuff I care about. Sounds very, very, very familiar. That is exactly what I did, and I cannot recommend it enough. So, Cereal Prize is basically just a hyper-curated site of stuff that that Topher Grace is into, and so he's kind of building out this little community. And you can follow him on Twitter at Topher Grace. So here you go, the Nerds Podcast number 477 with the delightfully charming Topher Grace.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Just what I imagine you would look
every time I've listened to it.
This is new. We just came in here. We haven't really... We've been sort of nomadic over the course of
the entire time.
The podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Would that help? Yeah.
We, initially, when I started the podcast, I bought
$1,500 worth of equipment. We had this giant soundboard.
It was a huge suitcase to carry everything.
All these really snazzy mics that I had to set up every time. And it just, every time we went somewhere, it just felt a little too, like a little too much.
Yeah.
And then we just stopped. It got smaller and smaller.
Now we're recording on an iPhone. On a Razor. We're recording on a Razor.
Some people, good reference. But you didn't. You could have mentioned the Crazer, which was the second generation Razer phone.
Wow. Yeah. 101 MP3s.
101 MP3s. Yeah, you could get U2's album on it. I think that was like there was like a U2 Crazer, I think. But anyway, thank you for being on the podcast.
No, thank you. I'm a big fan. I was just saying before you got here.
Really?
Well, that Tom Hanks one was insane. That first. I mean, it was like he just gave the oral history of his whole career. It was great.
Without trying. We didn't really have to even nudge him. He just went into it.
No, and a lot of people, when they do podcasts for the first time, especially if they're from the generation above us,
yes,
there's usually like 15 minutes of, so what is this?
Right.
What are we?
Like Christopher Lloyd didn't even know we were recording for the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I remember going, the only other podcast I've been on was, I went on Jimmy Kimmel, and Adam Carolla was on it that night, and he has a podcast.
Yeah.
And I've been in Hollywood for a while, sadly, and like I had not experienced the podcast. So maybe I had that kind of experience where I thought, once I wrap my head around it, it's so freeing. A, you're not on camera.
That's right. Yeah.
And B, you feel like there's such a specific audience listening to it that like you could actually. I feel like when I listened to Tom Hanks one, it was that he could actually let go and didn't have to do sound bites like on Leno or you know what I mean?
Yeah, he could stretch it out.
It's a sort of like long form. The conversation ebbs and flows, and so you don't have to go to the same well every time. And it's like it's really just like it's humanizing. I feel like it's sort of humanizing.
Yes.
People can just talk like people.
Yeah.
As opposed to when I worked on that thing, this director.
You gotta have a punchline. The audience has to laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, you must know from if you're doing a press junket in the morning. I'm sure you start and then you just start workshopping, and by the end of the press junket, you're like, okay, these are the five answers that work.
The workshopping is so the right word, and then also. You forget if you hit those points in that last one. I mean, or the third to last. They say you always like injure yourself on your last ski run.
Yep.
You go one more run. And there have been so many times where, you should look this up on YouTube because there are a bunch of clips of people doing it, where my thing is I always go back to, it's great. So I'm in the middle of talking about something. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. Yeah, it was great. It's a great experience.
Well, what specifically was great about it? No, what specifically was great about it?
It was very great.
Oh, yeah, no, we got that part. Which part was the... I had to do that. I did that... Yesterday morning, I did the radio tour where it's like you'd spend like an hour and a half doing all these radio stations.
That's even worse because you're not even making eye contact with people. You're just like alone in a room.
No, and then not only that, at least in a junket, you're a little more in control because they're coming into your space.
Yeah.
But when you're doing a radio tour, you're going into their ecosystem.
Yeah.
And you don't know, like, you know, they start referring to someone. They're like, yeah, that's like a dickhead. And they're like, who's dickhead? Am I... what did he do? Am I part of the joke?
Dickhead's Buzzo's buddy. He always shows up. It's so funny.
I went on one where I'd been on it for 2 hours, and you're talking to different radio stations, and then I guess one of them were like shock jocks, and I didn't know it.
Oh.
You know, everyone had been very nice, and then someone was asking me, oh, God, some crazy personal question about some girl I had dated. I didn't even know they knew I had dated. You know, it was like... And it was such a hardcore question. I think they were... I mean, can you swear on this?
Yeah.
They were asking me if this girl was shaved. I mean, it was like... It was so inappropriate. And so my tactic was, I said, do you guys want to get real? Like, do you guys want to get really real? And they were like, yeah. Like, are you about to open up about this? And I was like, you know what? I murdered someone. And they were like, whoa, what? And they were like, all right, haha. And I was like, no, I'm like messed up about it. And I got to talk about it. And they're like, well, what about that girl? I was like, dude, I'm telling you that I killed a man. Like, I watched her life go out of his eyes. And you know why I did it? Just to feel again.
As a matter of fact, we shaved her in memoriam.
So forget your thing. Like, I mean, I killed a man. And they're like, all right, man, like, get off. Like,
see, at least that would have at least been entertaining to listen to, of like having the tables turned a little bit, because they're so, guys like that are so used to being in control.
Yeah. They hated that. Yeah.
And they really don't like it. If it's like, oh, well, I mean, it's not cool. Like, they can't wrap their minds around it.
I just took his wallet and I got out of there.
It wasn't about the money. It was,
he had a fucking
family.
It was
about, you know, like just feeling alive.
Yeah.
And I liked it, guys. I liked it.
Where do you live?
Yeah.
Where do you live? Let's hang out. What are you guys doing after the show?
Yeah. This has been fun.
Yeah. You guys are just like me. Crazy.
Never had this kind of connection with anyone before. I was just waiting for someone to ask me that question. But I would love. See, I feel like it's your duty every time to do that in every single one where they
about someone I murdered.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then
all these backstories of different,
like, I got
people.
Away with it. I'm kind of messed up as to whether or not that's good, you know. Yeah.
But then what happens?
Never, last time, this will be the last guy I murder. You can count on that until maybe the next interview.
Yeah.
I was done until people wanted to start talking about it, and then I just realized I needed to keep filling
so
that
fun.
Up. But then someone will discover like a body, and then you're like, no, it was a bit.
Yeah, it was a bit.
I was being sarcastic.
Hours of interview evidence. It's Topher Grace. He's a murderer.
I'm a sarcastic psychic. When I say things sarcastically, it turns out they're true.
Let's get off of this.
So how have you been? I've followed you on Twitter. I noticed that you joined somewhat recently. Is it good? Have you been appreciating and embracing it? Are you scared of it yet? Or is
I'm starting a website. That's why I'm here. And I only really joined Twitter to kind of aggregate people who might care that I'm starting a website.
Sure.
But it was very nice to. You were one of the first friendly people to say welcome. That's like kind of a scary thing. Especially if you know you're a loser because you're the 8 billionth person to sign up for it, you know?
No, but I like to welcome people that come on, especially. And also, it's, you know, I like to let the people who follow me that also would want to follow you, like, hey, he's on Twitter now. And, you know, that you probably wanted access to this guy for a while. And here it is.
I'm terrible at it. That's why I'm doing the website, is eventually it's going to shoot out to, or every day it'll shoot to Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. So I just don't know what to say about myself in 100. You're literally a comedian. Like, you understand how to do a joke in that amount of time. I just work with Sarah Silverman. She like knows how to. You know what I mean? Like, I don't write jokes really.
I gotta tell you, I'm
like, I murdered someone. Like, hashtag, like, kidding. You know?
Here's the Twitter evidence, Mr. Topher Grace.
Yeah.
He's tweeting his thrill kills. But I feel like I'm actually not that funny on Twitter because I don't write good quick. Sarah's really good at quick jokes. Jonas, you're good at quick jokes too.
Mainly puns.
I'm no good at at quick observational stuff.
Like, I know Anna Kendrick, and she's like it's a whole form of content.
Yeah,
like, it's really interesting. I just don't. I don't know. I don't lead that kind of life or something. I don't have interesting little things to share with people.
It's always weird when you're with people and then like you both experience like the same thing or you see the same thing happen. And then they have like the perfect way to say it on Twitter.
You don't,
like, hey, wait, we had the same information.
Yeah.
We had the same things happen to us. And you, all right.
And then
you.
You can spend like 5 tweets going, so I just saw this guy.
Yeah,
and he had this bread in his hand, and I don't know.
Yeah. Look at bread.
I want to say, I'm good in person.
Yeah.
Like, at all these mediums, that's what I want to say is like, you know, like, I'm doing okay here, right?
So, if you have a series of tweets that you think are boring, you should just hashtag them like Topher IRL, like in real life.
In real life, like that was funny.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
I had like
in
a way
life.
I delivered it, right?
You get me off
trust
Twitter.
Me.
Hashtag you had to be there.
140 characters. I can't, you know, it's too.
Yeah, and like selfies, and I don't really want to take pictures of myself. And then like the other night, I did this thing that all these celebrities were at, and I was like, do I walk up to them and be like, yo, man, let's get a picture? And then if you post it, that's weird, right? Like,
the only time I would do that...
I did it to share it with everyone.
Like. I think there are times when it's okay. Like, if it's a really big... let's say, like, Cher was there. And you went up, Cher, can we get a big... Like,
oh, yeah.
Then you have to post
it. Like Charlie Sheen or someone
awesome. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If it's sort of like someone, you know, someone like that, the sort of the Jupiter of the solar system. But if it's, you know, but if it's someone that that you don't know, but they're kind of in your circle, then I feel like it's weird.
That's even worse, right? Yeah.
Unless they seem excited about it, like, oh my God, it's so good to see you. You know,
or you have to call it out and be like, should we? Yeah. Throw up this chance encounter.
I have been in situations where I kind of said like, oh, I don't want to be the, and then that person will go, oh, let's get a selfie, yeah. And then I'm like, oh, okay, it's okay. So everyone's just as nervous and ridiculous.
I pulled one off Wire Image the other because I did this reading of this thing, and everyone was on, and I was like, that was a picture that was taken, and it's all of us who did the reading. Except it says like Wire Image over my face. I don't know.
I think it's funnier that way. I think a Wire Image selfie. Yeah.
But it's just all like Wire Images of me putting it in with other celebrities. Like other, like the celebrity has Wire Image over it.
Yes.
Me without. Like,
yes. Without the logo. Or you taking a selfie in front of a giant computer screen with Wire Image celebrities in the back.
That's not a bad. What I did this website was three reasons. And I'm psyched that I both got to know you on Twitter, and it's all, you know, I'm getting to know a couple people in different cool ways because of this. But about a year ago, I re-edited this Star Wars thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard
of
it.
Yeah.
This room has probably heard of it.
I got an invite to the Soho House
screening.
That's
right. I invited you through Jamie.
And okay, I was heartbroken because I had to go out of town. I was doing stand-up, so I had to go out of town.
Oh,
so
I hope you were so mad once you read about it, right?
I was so bummed because I really, really
It's never
going to
be shown again, by the way.
I know.
Sorry, buddy.
I know. God damn it. I know. And it was one of those situations where I'm like, fuck. But I had to go. I had to
what happened with that was I was a producer on a film, so for the first time I went into editing, and I gave the worst notes in the history of time. Like you, as an actor, you kind of do the movie, and then you wait 9 months, and then you watch the movie, and you go like, "Hey, what took you so long, guys? Like, mm-hmm. you know, this isn't that. You know, it's what we shot." And then once I was in the editing room, I realized what an art that is. It's like sculpting or something, where you know, one frame makes a huge difference, and then. If I was giving the worst notes, like the second half has to be faster, and I don't like that little part where I smile and do the thing. It was all over the place. And so I bought an Avid after that experience, and I got a tutor, and I just at my home started to learn how to edit. And it has been, by the way, I'll never try to professionally edit. Like, it's more like a director taking an acting class before he directs a movie, just to kind of get into that. But I think it's made me better in the sense that I just understand how it works. I used to kind of like maybe drive at the same thing a couple times, but I've heard, you know, like Tom Hanks or Denzel or these great actors, they always do something different because once you have it, you know, you have it.
It's already down. So
yeah, so I've fallen in love with first of all, it's fun to do. It's like Tetris or something. It's like a fun game or something to find.
Do you mind
what
if
fits
I?
Where.
Why'd you pick Avid over Final Cut? Just curious.
You know, I actually moved over to Final Cut, which is terrible because now the new Final Cut isn't as great, and I have the older system. I wanted to learn how to do it on Avid because that's kind of like
industry
when you go into these industry rooms, what they're normally cutting.
Yeah.
But Final Cut is delicious. I mean, it's
it's fun.
And the first film I did was Atonement. I wanted to do something I wasn't in. And I had like an opinion about how Atonement could have a happy ending. And like three people. But you know, they have all those flashbacks.
Yeah.
And I used them in different ways. And I had a blast doing it. And then this is a great interview. Because this is the only time anyone will ever listen or even care about
this thing that I did.
Great.
I'm telling you, I think one of the fun things about podcasting is listening to people talk about things that they actually care about.
Yes.
It's interesting to listen to people talk about stuff. So hearing you, the idea of editing to me is very stressful because what I see as a non-editor is a million ways to fuck something up and like one or two right ways to do it. And so that stresses me out because of I feel weighed down by the infinity of choice, basically.
Yes.
Of this could be anything. You could stitch this together in any way. The beginning could be the end. You could change. You could add.
Well, you're clearly a very nice, non-manipulative. You don't have a god complex like myself. Like, you know, there. And let me tell you, that's why I wanted to edit something that I wasn't in. Because maybe if you were editing the Comedy Central thing, you'd be like, what do you guys think? Or so, you know, I'm already a part of it. But to come at something with fresh eyes, which is really what editing is all about, it's like looking at it a different way. When I finished that Atonement thing, I showed it to five people who hadn't ever seen Atonement. And they dug it. I mean, they didn't know what they were missing. Kind of. But I used a lot of the outtakes and stuff, and it was still only like 38 minutes long.
Wow.
So they were like, a cool short film. And then I thought, all right, what's a whole piece of material?
Mm-hmm.
Like you would have hours and hours of footage from a film that was filmed that I could kind of bring into one story. And I wasn't a big fan of the new Star Wars movies, but I'd seen them. And I thought, you know, there's kind of one whole story in there, sadly, because it's three movies.
Right.
But I think I could, I don't know, it was interesting. It was before J.J. was a part of that thing, so it was like maybe everyone thought that was it for Star Wars.
Right.
So I put them back to back to back with all the outtakes in. So it was like about 9.5 hours long, this piece.
Wow.
And then I just whittled it. And I was being tutored at the time. I'm not. I like Star Wars, but I'm not the hugest fan of it. But I, this was great because
so nothing was precious to you.
Nothing was too precious. Yeah. And I just wanted to make one good kind of story as an editing exercise, and then we had this screening, which I didn't know was gonna. If you want to know how many people it takes to set the internet on fire, it's two bloggers. One blogger, it might be like, I don't know if that really happened.
But two of them.
Two bloggers, which we happened to invite. It was like I was trending number one on Twitter. It was just weird enough. You know, the guy from 70's Show, you cut Star Wars. And then it was... like, people like, you're not even on Twitter, and you're trending on Twitter. Like, you
right.
have to... figured out, so I decided I wanted to do a site that kind of dealt with a lot of stuff that I dig that might not be on other sites.
That's nice. Exactly why I started my thing. Like, it was like, yeah. This makes me happy. I think that's the best reason.
I almost called it shitilike.com. It's called serialprize.com, but at the beginning, that's what I thought the title would be.
I think that's the best reason to do anything. Because the other thing about it is that it... You know, I mean, it sounds like you had the same issues that I had. I mean, I've been on Twitter for like 6 years, but in the beginning, I was like, what am I going to, you know, first it was a blog. Like, what am I going to blog about? I don't want to talk about, here's what I had, you know, here's the eggs that I had for breakfast. Although I did spend about a year going, here's the eggs that I had for breakfast.
That's some crazy eggs.
These are fucking crazy eggs.
Crazy eggs.
Like, one of them, the yolk's all crazy as shit. Hashtag YOLO. But then...
YOLO.
But then I...
Nice, oh, nice. I almost did it. I'm going to go YOLO, but...
Fantastic.
It was like a cop. YOLO. Oh, I'm sorry.
But I think, you know, when I started the thing, I was like, well, this is an indirect way of letting people know who I am by talking about the things that I like.
Here's the thing, man. It's content. Like, if you're an actor like I am, the only time you can really deliver good content is... when you're in a movie that's coming out that someone great directed that you're lucky enough to be a part of, or you're on a TV show that you've been a part of creating over years. There's only so many things you can do in the in-between when you don't have a studio behind you.
Right.
You know, it's like right now, those Catching Fire kids are everywhere. Where'd those Twilight kids go? You know what I mean? Like, when you have a studio that has, you know, $100 million to spend on a marketing push every time.
Right.
Like, you have that kind of pipeline. But in the interim, if you want to say something, I wanted to elevate that content. And there are many different kinds of content. There's being a spokesperson for something,
mm-hmm.
which I don't want to do. You know, like you're selling someone's product, but right. that's a way that you can be on billboards and you can kind of be in a communication with, like, an elevated communication with the audience. There's you can date someone publicly.
Yep.
Which is, I can't believe people don't pay enough attention to this, but it's like a soap opera that every week you watch in Us Weekly or
said that last night. That's so crazy you say that. Yeah, we had an actress on. She's a young actress and she's on a Nickelodeon show, and she's 21. So it was just having this discussion about, like, how do you know, you're essentially on a teenage show, but you're a woman, but people are still...
Oh, I've been to that party, dude.
But people still expect you to be this. And so, you know, she doesn't understand the obsession with celebrity culture. And I said the exact same thing. I was like, yeah, it's like a soap opera. People would be in otherwise. And so they're through print.
There's like an A plot line where this huge movie star is dating a girl. And then when they break up, she has like a B plot line.
Yeah, there's in the documentary Celebrity. which is like a photographer. It's all about the paparazzi and the gossip culture, but they talk about how it's like they looked back and showed like all breakups throughout, like, you know, celebrity culture.
And we all know about them.
Yeah,
like we're sharing in this. You know, the same way you know about whoever's dating on, like, oh man, I don't even know what the show is. What is it, Vampire Diaries? I was going to say 90210, which is dated even if it's the new. But
I think the new 90210 has vampires. I think everything they fucking vampires now.
Yeah, everything.
But so that's one way to do it. You can go to jail or do something bad. Like, that's a kind of content for the audience. Or you can do social media. And for me, 140 characters or, you know, like, night out with the boys. Or whatever, a picture of me and my friends. I mean, like, I just didn't do it. So I decided to. I mean, it's more personal. I'm sure you're covering on Nerdist like a lot of different things. Like, I'm just covering what I want to.
Now we are, but for the first 2 years, it was just me.
Yeah,
it was just me. And then I started to get crushed from the weight of the responsibility of, like, because I'd work all day doing other stuff, and then I'd be like, I have to write something, you know. And then it was just the, what do I like? I started to get to those points of like, what do I like? I don't know what I like today. What am I interested in? So it was just trying to. I mean, that's sort of the thing that you have with stand up is when you start, you know, you're like, I want to write stuff, but then you really have to go, what do I care about? You know, you get those moments where you get that block where you don't even know yourself for a moment.
Yeah.
So it can be a little. I recommend bringing a contributor sooner or later. I think it'll be very.
Probably. I mean, maybe. But for me right now, it's a way to say, here's something. It's 80% just aggregated stuff that I dig that I want to kind of highlight. And some of it's old, you know, just stuff that I dig from the past or a collection of different things or kind of a best of list. And then 20% of it's going to be more self-centered, like stuff that I either made or stuff from a set or stuff from a premiere. We're going to do another screening. You should come to this next screening.
I would love to.
We're going to do Close Encounters.
I would love to. And then, listen, if we become friends, if you happen to have a screening night at your place or you just leave a DVD in your mailbox of the Star Wars thing, that would be fine.
You know, every 1,000th person I bump into goes insane. And does that kind of, you're doing like a cooler version of it, but they're like, let me see it.
I'll get in and get out. I promise I won't even use the bathroom. Just let me just see it.
Chris, are those Google glasses?
What are you talking about?
Those Google glasses. You'll like Close Encounters. There are many cuts of Close Encounters. And it's all kind of tightened, but then everything's put back in.
Yep.
It's cool.
It is. I mean, it is interesting that that even on the level of you know, even like on a Spielberg level, that he could make something and then everyone could go, this is one of the greatest things in the history of the art form, and then he could go, but it still could have had this other. Like, there's still things that they feel like, I should tweak it.
Plus, I'm calling it. This was my thing, editing it. Once again, I do not want to become a professional editor. That's the one fear I have talking about this. Is just like, you know, a hobby, like fishing or something. But I thought, this is going to be a post-Raiders cut, which is he kind of was that guy, but he was still also kind of trying to make The Godfather.
Yep.
Yeah. Just with aliens or sharks or something.
Yep.
He was still in that. And that was the time, too, was these kind of... I mean, wonderful films, but they would kind of be languid sometimes. And then after 1941 came out, he went like, fuck it. And like just went with his instincts, and that's what Raiders is. You know, it's like really that pace. So I tried to go to... He has a couple jokes that are hidden, but if they're cut the right way, they're kind of a little... he's a genius, and this is probably bastardizing his stuff.
No, but it's fun. I think it's a fun way to pay homage to someone, and
it's
also
totally done out of respect. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like the fact that you would say like, well, there's some hidden jokes. There are probably things that, you know, maybe were either just for himself or like, oh, I wonder why most people didn't pick up on this one thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's, you know, just sort of getting granular with it and playing with it that way. I think it's a loving tribute, because ultimately you have to live with the material for a long time in order to do that.
Oh, yeah. It's almost like you kind of enter the film. That's what's cool. Like, just watching like what Joe Wright did in Atonement is, I mean, the guy's brilliant. Like, I hope at some point to show all these filmmakers, these alt cuts. I wonder what they think.
I got you a present.
Yeah,
I got that's what you should have done.
It's a 3-minute version of your film.
Son of a bitch!
He's right.
Well, I think it's probably the best way to try to understand I see it as a way of seeking understanding. I think it's one of the best ways to try to understand how they did what they did by deconstructing it, and then maybe taking, you know, taking this drawing from the same pool of pieces and then just putting them, reassembling them.
Yeah, and time has passed too with some of these. You know, like they would probably do it differently now too.
Yeah.
Also, the audience has changed because every movie has been copying Close Encounters since it came out. So, like, it's kind of the same movie, but paced up and kind of, not better, but, like, aware of Close Encounters. So try to kind of pace it up. It's, you might not notice that much. It's not as sexy as a Star Wars thing. It's kind of like a more, but you should come. You guys should all come.
I would love to. I think there's more room. This is sort of related, but I think there's more room. So do you prefer sci-fi? Do you like sci-fi a lot, or do you just like kind of playing with it?
Sure. Yeah, I'm just not. That's the other thing I wanted to do with Serial Prize was make it. I love your website. When I go to it, I can really follow it. Some of these entertainment websites I go to are so, they have to post so much, I think is what it is. Like, I don't know about Sailor Moon. Like, I don't, you know, the fact that they're doing a Sailor Moon, I don't know what that even is. But I liked Star Wars and Indiana Jones, and I think the majority, I'm only posting once a day, and I think the majority of, maybe I'm wrong, but I think people who are like me want just kind of, you know, just play the hits, right?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
If you're going to a concert, you know, I don't need to hear the deep cuts.
Yeah.
But after a while, you might kind of find some trenches to go down of like really deep. And I think the rule is that as long as you really care about it, that's the connective tissue.
Right.
You know, as long as you really, even if it's something that most people wouldn't know, as long as you're really passionate about it, I think that's what will draw people.
Well, I liked, I mean, the site is kind of an homage to, you know, the background is like a child's bedroom, and that for me is like the 80s. I mean, I know it flowed into the 90s, and we're still, when I watch the Avengers or like Super 8, obviously had a ton of it, but like I love that. I miss that Amblin feeling, that like, you know, that magic. It's like Batman's committing suicide. James Bond is committing suicide. Like, remember when he used to have all these gadgets? They both had all these gadgets. And now they're both committing suicide.
Yeah.
Like, I miss even the bad Amblin films I miss, you know?
There was definitely that sort of
wonder. They were trying to capture wonder. Yeah.
There was a sense of wonder. And, you know, maybe some of it was to do with our ages at the same. Like, we were just the right age.
Oh, no. And if you watch Goonies, first of all, I had a weird experience where I watched Goonies for the first time 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I just missed it somehow. You know, everyone has missed one great, like, you know, someone missed Teen Wolf. I'm like, you didn't see Teen Wolf?
How could you? He was serving.
It's amazing.
It's funny to me that, and then we'll go back to the Goonies fiasco of the mid-80s. But the fact that MTV would take Teen Wolf and then turn it into their version of Teen Wolf.
That's what we're going through right now.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as Bond or Batman. The darker it is, the cooler it is. And I don't know what that is. Maybe a reaction to 9/11. I have no idea. But it probably is. You know, like this kind of darker is cooler. But, you know, God, the wonder. I was saying, even when I saw The Goonies 2 years ago, and certainly it's not as easy going down as when you were five, you still go, they're going for.
Right.
Like, they're shooting this all at a kid's height. You know what I mean? It was interesting. Yeah. Like you know, what they were going for with E.T., they're just a very different thing now. And I hope. I just read that Steve Martin book, Born Standing Up.
Yeah, yep.
God, I love that book.
Did you read it or did you listen to the audiobook?
You know, I read it and then someone told me and I listened to the audiobook.
It's good, yeah.
Because I think it's better as an audiobook because he's doing it.
I do too, because he reads it. Because then he kind of does his old bits and then it's totally.
You can tell at the beginning he's trying to do it like any other reader and then halfway through the book he starts like kind of doing the bits. Like.
Which is amazing because the thing that sort of saddened me about it is that I know, or at least I believe, that in Steve's mind, he was doing that to sort of share the story, but then close the door on it. Like,
right, and open it up.
I will never talk about these things again. If you want to talk about these things, they're in this book, and I will never say.
But
these
it really probably introduced
again.
Everyone to. Yeah, he was. That book is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But he said that thing about how there was this post-Vietnam Watergate thing where everything was dark, and stand-ups could get up on stage and say like, Nixon, and the audience would laugh.
That's still funny.
Yeah, and like he, well, him telling it is funny, but I don't ever want to go to a club where someone says Nixon, and the country is that fucked up.
Yeah,
that's a laugh. You know, like
did you uh-oh. Have you ever worked with Steve or met Steve?
I met him. We had a lunch together, and
what?
Yeah, I know. That was like one of my all time. I think he was recording the book at the time. I'll tell you about the lunch, but my point is, I think we might be at one of those breaking points where how much darker can we go?
Right.
I know it's always cooler when it's darker, but I miss the wonder. I mean, these are public trust, these things, you know?
Well, part of that, I believe, and then I really want to hear about the Steve Martin lunch, but part of that, I believe, is that because our culture is this virtual open book at all times. I mean, again, the internet, the best and worst thing to happen to our culture is that at all times we're assaulted with all information about everything. And, yeah. You know, a lot of times the things that captivate us are the, you know, it's like the evening news. It's the darker, shittier stuff. And so that starts to populate what your perception. And then you're like, oh, everything's shitty. And it's like, well, no, you're seeing everything all at once. Yeah. But the shitty stuff is popping. You're like seeing all the shitty stuff at once.
You know, I remember one time I was in middle school and, you know, you're like kind of finding yourself. And I went over to someone's party and they're like, how are you? And I was like, fuck off, dude. I just decided to be like a badass that day. And everyone, I was cooler. I was cooler. I just couldn't keep it up. It wasn't like innately who I was. Like, I wanted to share in things with people. But I think it's always easier to be cooler if you're darker.
Sure.
It's much harder to do. I mean, like, the flip side of E.T. is like, what, always? You know what I mean? Where it goes too far and you're like, whoa. So, yeah. And then no one wants to be in that. It's always cooler to go darker. Even if it's not as good a movie, it still looks cooler.
Yeah, but he's a ghost and he's got to help his wife find love. And that's how Audrey Hepburn's going to take him into the next world.
I forgot even Audrey Hepburn was in that. Yeah, but I hope I have that kind of career. Where when I'm very old, people have me play like angels or God.
That's how you know. Or narrate everything.
Or narrate everything.
Yeah.
So, exactly.
Yeah, either God or voice of God. Like, those are one of the two things
yes,
that you
exactly,
want.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Okay, so your lunch with Steve Martin. How did this come about, and how did you form words?
It was a meeting on an idea, which was Filthy Rotten Scoundrels, which is now he's the older one, and there's going to be a younger guy. And it was such a good idea.
Jesus
which is,
Christ.
I know, which would have been the greatest sequel of all time. And then the twist is that... Oh, man. Well.
Is it ever going to happen?
No, so who cares? It was going to be that Michael Caine was the guy. Like, you didn't think he's in the movie, and then it turns out he's the guy who's orchestrating the...
God,
so
oh, some... damn it!
Yeah.
Was Frank Oz going to be back on board?
It was really early. I think it was a producer who was putting it together, and it didn't kind of come together. And but it was a terrific lunch, and I thought... you know, I think people know he can be, even reading that book, he talks about it. He's not what you expect when you meet him.
Right.
You know, he's not performing for you. And he knows when it's time to perform, and he's probably the best alive at it.
Right.
But I didn't think he was also really that, he wasn't cold or anything. He's actually a very warm guy. He's just, you're looking for the most entertaining human.
Yeah.
And then if he sees something that is interesting to him, this is my experience in the lunch, he will... go after it and really want to talk about it. And
you also had a reason to be there, which was to talk about this. And he knew who you were.
When we talked about other stuff, it was great. I mean, it was like, we talked about New York and I just read Object of Beauty, his book, you know, that takes place in the art world. And he's really involved with art collecting. Yeah. I mean, that's it. What has he not done?
Yeah. Is it his music career, stand-up career, film career? Art collector.
And I don't even think that guy does it for the awards, even though he's won every award. I think he literally just loves finding a new thing. It's funny, you look at comedians who started at the time he started, and that guy just, that's what you hope for every performer, is that they want to go into new mediums like the internet.
He also caught the, he was also a product of, there was a certain amount of timing in that SNL was this groundbreaking show, and he was really SNL blew him up. Like, SNL totally blew him up. Right, that because I've talked to comics who were like, yeah, you know, you'd see Steve in a room doing what Steve did, and you know, most of the room wouldn't get it. A handful of people would really get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he went and did SNL, and then it was like,
TV's powerful. I remember being such a loser in my first year of college. It wasn't working at parties with girls, even talking to dudes. I mean, like, people were not getting my humor. And then five episodes later of 70 show,
just
people were like, got it.
Like, this guy murdered somebody. Come here.
Yeah, I mean, like I make the murder joke, you know, before that, you know, you know, it's a problem.
Great, you were great on that 70 show. And that, thanks, that show, I remember I did a sitcom the year that show launched, because I remember being at Upfronts when your show.
Oh, yeah.
But your show was.
I know we've met like once or twice kind of in passing.
Yeah. But, and this may have been one of those times, but this was like 98 maybe. And it was at Upfronts in New York. But that 70s show was called something else first.
That's right. It was called Teenage Wasteland.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
That's a great name for that show.
Yes. I think the folks over at The Who. That was going to be our theme song. It was Bob O'Reilly.
Yeah.
We actually taped that, I think. And then they said, no go.
Wow.
And they gave it to CSI, so.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
made more sense.
They're old.
We're about a bunch of kids who love rock and roll in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's make it about murder.
It was CSI Miami, right? It was CSI. Yeah. Was it CSI Miami that got Teenage Wasteland?
Yeah.
No, that's a different
ratio. Is that a different one?
No, it was the third one. It was the New York one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but you guys got a Big Star song. So
that was my introduction to Alex Chilton too.
And really?
It was fantastic. That was a lot of 70s music I didn't know, but I remember seeing you. I don't know if you knew this. I was in the audience at
M-Bar.
M-Bar.
Oh yeah, you were in an M-Bar show.
I used to go all the time. I had a lot of friends there, and I still try to go. It's a great way to see people when they're kind of working on material. And I'm not a comedian, but I love watching that. And I watched you do your thing, and I mean, this is a huge compliment to you, because I love, like Jared Leto, for instance, who was like, I'm going to go do music. And people are like, that doesn't work. Like, actors don't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, I'm going to keep acting. Now he's going to win the Academy Award. Like, I love it. Like, I love when people, it's like the universe is saying, do this one thing.
Yeah.
And then you say, no, fuck you, and, like, break through it. And I don't think there's any better example than you, because I remember I was right in the age of whenever Singled Out hit. Like, I remember there's a girl from this boarding school I went to who on like spring break went on Singled Out, and I was like, oh, she's famous. She's the most famous person alive now. She like was chosen by, I mean, I forget how that show worked.
That is so fucking funny. I remember being in a bar once, and I was at the bar, and next to me, there was this dude, this kind of like meat-headed dude, and this really cute girl came up and recognized him and went, hey, you were just on Singled Out.
And
I was standing right next to him. I want to be like, I'm on every episode.
But that totally was, okay, so to touch the culture like that in a real way, to really touch pop culture, and then I remember seeing you at, it's called M-Bar?
M-Bar, it's M-Bar, yeah.
And you know what? You made the joke on stage right away, because it was whatever that transition period was where people would still know you most from that.
Yeah.
And still, I was like, people just don't believe it until it happens. Like, until they're at the Academy Awards and Jared Leto's up there. You know what I mean? They don't fully think it's going to. And I remember you saying it, and I was like, I don't know, like the guys from Singled Out. And then watching what you've done, man, it's impressive. And I love you saying that it's coming from all stuff that you love and that you were passionate.
Well, that's the important thing. Is like so much of the early part of a person's career is just sort of survival. Like, well, I just got to work. I just got to do this. Yeah. And then at a certain point, you either give up and stop doing it, or you say like, well, what do I want to do? Which is a question.
That's exactly what this site is that I'm doing.
It's exactly what you're doing. Yeah.
Getting in touch with that stuff.
And that's the right, I think those are the right questions to ask. And you know, anyone who might be like, oh, well, you're doing internet stuff now? Like, yeah, I'm doing internet stuff. This is what I want to do. And then,
well, but now everyone is probably, there's a tipping point, right? There was probably a tipping point with Nerdist, right? Where people were like, at the beginning, are people taking, well, they weren't taking it as seriously as they are now.
They weren't. I mean, you know, well, I mean, for the first handful of years, it was like, it was nerd tribalism of like, you're not a nerd, what do you know? And But then people really not, because for me it was stand-up, it was a lifelong obsession, and all this nerd culture stuff was a lifelong obsession. It's just, I didn't start doing it until after I had done something else first, And then so people want to put you in a box. So they'll go, and then you're Eric. What are you talking about? Yeah. You know? And so, but I really do
believe. They called you Eric, too.
They
huh?
called me Eric, too.
That's weird. that was your character's name on Singled Out, right?
That's right. Yeah.
That's how big your show was.
Foreman.
Now, you say that as a joke, but when Singled Out crossed over on Boy Meets World, we did face-to-face with the character of Eric, played by Will Friedle. So I was kind of an Eric for one episode of that show.
Wait, I don't understand.
We did a backup. We did a crossover.
And you were playing you.
I played me, but the joke was that Will Friedle and I looked alike because we both were white guys who had this drapey hair. And so there was a lot of he looks like Eric jokes in that episode.
Which, so in a way, you were almost on 70.
I kind of almost.
You were almost in Trojan War.
Jesus Christ.
Deep, it was a deep cut. Rare opportunity to make a Trojan War reference.
Stop cracking your knuckles like you're... Dave's cracking his knuckles now. Yep, my work here is done.
If I could take a nap.
Whoa, okay, bro. It's not gonna... But Danny Masterson was in Trojan War.
That's right. That's
if you want the full...
Go. Now who's cracking their knuckles? But I think it's I think it's really important to just keep at it, and you know, and then eventually, I mean, people will find other ways to attack you, but ultimately, it's you know, it's ebbs and flows. But the important thing is that you're doing what you love, and the important thing is that you're putting things in the world that you actually care about. And people will like the it's the Steve Martin thing of like the right people will get it.
Yeah.
Right. That's good advice. Yeah.
It really is. So. I mean, it just because were you not super social online before this, or did you kind of lurk around sites?
For all the reasons I was talking about, I don't like dating publicly.
Yeah.
I don't like selling things. Publicly or privately.
it's very
stressful. Black market's fine.
I'm not ever, you know, in trouble with the law or, you know, stuff that would make noise. And I'm not into social media. So when that thing trended at number one and people were like, you guys should have some kind of presence. I had to wait until my next movie came out for people to say, what was that Star Wars thing that you...
Then
it's the wrong people asking you. You know, it's like someone on Entertainment Tonight's like, you...
Oh, so you think you're better than George Lucas? No, yeah, exactly. I just was...
Exactly.
This was a thing.
Then I thought, all right, if I were to do it, like, how would I do it? And the answer is I want to have a full-on, like, room. Like a, not just a bulletin board, but a room that people can come into and root around and look at all this stuff. And I can communicate with them. And I didn't want it to have any Save the World qualities. I'm so sick of celebrity. I mean, if you knew as many... You do. But if you know as many celebrities as I do... They're not going to help anything. Like, why are they always in that group that's like, here, follow me? Like, don't follow them, except if it's on a show or in a movie. They're entertaining, you know?
Well, I think it is I think a lot of it is the publicity thing, but it's interesting to hear you say that you don't date publicly because it should make people realize that a lot of times the people you see all over those magazines have made some version of a choice to play into that.
Oh my God.
Because
and then you keep making more choices. That's what scared me. Is like if I ever started doing that with someone in a joke once that I wanted, oh man, it's like this is what happens in a podcast. You start opening up and you forget that you're even recording. But I wanted to write a book about my time in Hollywood called The People I Could Have Fucked. but there is that kind of like, you know, this would be good for both of us, and it would.
Yeah.
It's like a drug. You know, like the first hit would be amazing. Like you'd be more famous, you'd be offered more projects that Monday.
And it just gets dirtier and dirtier. Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, so who do I have to keep dating? Okay, if I date this person who I hate, it'll make a headline.
Oh, man.
And then I'll, you know.
And like for cocaine, it ends up you're blowing someone in a dumpster, except instead of cocaine.
That person is.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
What?
Fill in the blank.
Who? Anyone?
Someone from Trojan War. I don't know.
Donkey Lips from Salute Your Shorts.
Hey, no.
Wow, nice.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Holy shit.
I don't know why. I don't know why that came to my head.
That was a super, super, super deep cut.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It is because I remember when Joel McHale did that Soderbergh movie, he the Matt Damon one.
That movie's great. Yeah, The Informant.
The Informant, yeah. And so we were sort of talking about celebrity culture, and he goes, yeah, you know, like... You know, Matt Damon's not on the cover of Us Weekly all the time because he chooses not to be. Like when you travel,
I know him and his wife, by the way, and they are an amazing couple. Like they're the nicest people, and he's doing great work. He's in this movie I just did, Interstellar.
Yeah.
Like, and he's just an amazing guy, and it's clearly... I mean, there are many other people that aren't celebrities. There are actually more people on Earth that aren't celebrities.
What?
Than are celebrities.
What? Who are these people?
I don't know. I've never met any.
I've never met any.
But, I'm always flummoxed by that. But then I realize it is truly, all those things are a deal with the devil. So this, for me, is not just dating publicly, selling stuff publicly, or doing anything for, being a real fashionista.
Yeah,
that's a way to have a whole kind of content that you give the audience. They see you dressed up, and that certainly wasn't going to be the way I was going to go. So to me, this is like, I hope something that gets copied, but in different ways by people, which is give the audience what they should be expecting from you, which is better content than stuff they can get from their friends.
Well, also just stuff that you care about. And I think as long as people, there's one reason why. Or I'm sure there are a lot of reasons, but I think there's a major reason why, you could spend $100,000 making a super slick video and putting it up on YouTube and it gets 5,000 views, and some kid, goes out in his backyard and, takes video of his dog on a trampoline, and it's like 5 million views. Because I think anything that's too slick now, people feel like they're being sold something and they don't trust it.
Yeah.
So as long as people understand that you care about what you're saying to them, and that you're not trying to take advantage of their time or their money or their attention. Yes. Then I think they're like, okay, I'm in for this.
I mean, that's what a good movie is, essentially. No matter what amount of money is behind it, is that there's a pure thing you're trying to say. You're not trying to sell something.
Yeah.
To someone. You're trying to really say something.
And as an actor, God, you have so. I think out of anyone, I think an actor probably you have. I think some of the least amount of control in a movie about. Yeah. How that movie turns out, because you're being directed, you're being edited, you're being lit, they're putting music over you, and so I'm sure you read something, you go, oh my God, this is like the disparity between what you read.
I came to peace with that a long time ago, which is it's a collaborative medium and I'm not the boss. And honestly, that's another great thing about doing Serial Prize, is that I am the boss. And it's a great, time filler in between, when I'm on set, I'm not doing anything. But it's also like an artistic project. Sounds like some therapist gave me this. But it is. It's everything I love, going around and sharing stuff. I was always that guy. If you come over to my house, it's like, and again, this is not an invitation. It's just a hypothetical.
Sure. No, we'll be coming over.
But like you say, like, hey, I'll show you the Star Wars thing I did, or check out this video this guy did, or, love sharing that stuff. And so it was always really frustrating, to answer your question, to not be able to have any communication with the audience when I wasn't in a movie.
Yeah. And then also getting feedback and really, the constructive amounts of feedback. Do you envision yourself, did you tie a YouTube channel to this, or are you going to do video for the site?
There's video on the site, and then I guess once we do enough created content. A lot of it's like me pulling together stuff that I just want to. Like this morning, I took all the Roger Rabbit cartoons. Like, just no one's ever put them together, and that's just going to be a post.
Nice,
that's fantastic. Like all the shorts.
Yeah, all the shorts. Most of it's sitting out there on YouTube. Like I just did the other night, all the soap opera things that Greg Kinnear's in from. Nurse Betty? Remember that
movie?
Oh,
yeah. I love
it's amazing.
Nurse
Betty. There are like 12 episodes, and Greg Kinnear is brilliant on the soap opera. And I'm like, that's a post. Like, and I was watching him. It's just like, maybe this is all just a product that my friends really don't want to sit there and watch all this stuff with me. But I think someone will, there's tons of stuff that's on there that I love. And then there's stuff that I want to do when I'm on the set of a movie or in promotion for that movie. That I have liked doing Funny or Die stuff like that, but why not do it for my website?
Well, I think at least, I mean, maybe you have an overall plan with everything. Do you have an overall plan with all of it?
No.
Okay, but
that also goes for my career.
But I feel, I think on a subconscious level, your brain is trying to express something that it's leading you to. That there is, that at some point after you've done enough of it, you'll look back and go, oh, well, this will now afford me the ability to do this, which is something that I actually really wanted to do. that I feel like there's something that you're working towards that maybe your conscious mind isn't fully aware of yet that you're trying to express.
Well, I hope for me the success that you had with The Nerdist. Like, I love what that represents. And it's funny, it becomes like, I use the word brand because that means there's some marketing element to it, but it becomes like a... once enough people know the name The Nerdist, they understand what that means, which is I believe it's cool now to do this stuff, right?
I hope so. I mean, I think what we represent is just that it's okay to like the things that you like, and it's okay to celebrate things that you're fanatical about, and it's okay to. I hope that ultimately the message is like, well, it's supportive, and you know, it's cool because when I was growing up, it was not cool to like the things that I was into, and I was socially ostracized and tortured relentlessly growing up in the South. And so it just, you know, for me, it's just like, hey, this is sort of like a hug. Yeah. It's okay to like these things, and you're not a, you know, great. Like you don't have to be ashamed. But there are a lot of great aggregation sites that have you checked out likecool.com?
Oh yeah, I've been on a whole tour. It was great at the beginning. I kind of started working on it 6 months ago, and it was great to look at what other people have done. For me, Serial Prize means I love that feeling. And even if you weren't alive in the 80s, everyone has a Saturday morning version of life, which is your parents are still asleep. You wake up.
Eat shitty cereal.
Eat that. They don't have that really great shitty cereal that we had, though. I mean, like...
No, no.
That Lucky Charms, and you find that prize.
Yeah.
And I think all these things should be just like... Like, there's that JDOhead mashup album I'm going to put on there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or, like, I'm doing best songs of the 90s. I'm going to do a whole week that's, like, best songs of the 90s and 80s. Nice. Like, when you go into, like, at all fake songs. From bands that don't exist.
Oh, perfect.
Like, so, hey, that's my bike. What's the one? The Citizen Dick.
Touch Me, I'm Dick.
Jesse and the Ripper, Zach Attack. Like, there's like a whole list, a whole week that goes for the jacket. But I want that feeling of when people get to it, that kind of like, we're about to watch cartoons. You know, on that little like black and white TV that's in the kitchen.
Yep.
You know?
What I hear you saying is that you want to create that thing that you were talking about, that 80s Amblin feeling of like wonderment and excitement and fun, and you know, this is all really cool. And I mean, I was very much alive in the 80s, and so I was old enough to catch all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I do kind of miss it too, because there is a lot of shit that's really cynical. So I think it's good to, especially when you look at the landscape of how much negative stuff there is and how much cynical stuff, that like putting good, nice things is very refreshing for people at the same time.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see what it grows into. I mean, I'll probably wind up calling you for advice. But
I'll tell you whatever I think I know, but I don't. I still feel like it's funny. Maybe you feel like this way too, with, you know, even as long as you've been acting too, where there are some days where you go, I totally got this shit nailed down. And then you'll go to bed that night going, why did I think I knew what was happening? Like, you seem so blindsided by everything that I think the trick is like, you just don't ever really know anything.
Yeah. I have more of that than the first one. But I really like trying new stuff. I think you feel more like that as an actor if you repeat the same kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
That's why I think that Steve Martin thing is like, when he gets, not bored, but when he says, okay, I got this on lock. Then he learns the banjo, or then he, you know, gets into art, or that's what I'm getting from that book.
Yeah.
And I'm basically the new Steve.
I mean,
that's a terrible. I'm not comparing myself.
Let's be honest. He does not want to be the Steve Martin anymore. He has to. That's like the Dread Pirate. It's like
the Dread Pirate
Roberts. He has to pass down the Steve Martin.
Right. And I think, if anything, I'm much, you know, more talented.
Well, the original Steve Martin is living like a king in Patagonia. But I think it must be interesting. I wonder what it's like, because there was definitely online, you weren't, but not as much social media when that 70s show was on, but there were certainly forums and chat rooms and so, but you didn't go near any of that. But I would imagine that, do you find that people are threatened by you sometimes because you're a handsome man who speaks very articulately and you have this acerbic wit? Do you feel like people are like, hey, what's that guy? What is he all about?
Do you mean just in my personal life? Or
no, I mean just like online and the way that people interact and like making sort of snap judgments.
No, I haven't interacted that much with people online. I mean, someone told me this, like, don't worry when you go on Twitter. Like, the only people who show up Like, it's something, like, when I show up in a comic book store, everyone's like, yo, man, I loved Venom, man. Great job. And I'm not sure they say that when I'm not there. But
did you just type in all caps the opposite of that?
Yeah, I know. And then,
no, bro.
Yeah, I know. So I think, like, yes, there's a version of that on Twitter where, or wherever you are on the internet, sure. Where if they know you're there, they're a little more polite. And by the way, I'm sure I'm guilty of saying with my friends that, you know, whatever, like, I didn't like Always, like, right. I just did in this yeah. program. And let me tell you something, like, that's better than any movie I could ever direct, and it's right. yeah. a fantastic film, and I worship Spielberg. So, you know, everyone's kind of guilty of saying that stuff when someone's not listening, but I haven't, that wasn't why I did it this way or created Serial Prize that way.
Yeah.
I just think it's, I just want to share big cuts of content that you can't, you know, like, I don't want to write a, like you're saying, like, hey, check out this omelet, like, hashtag, Like, yeah. That's something a buddy could text to anyone in America. I want to, you know, our job, just like this podcast should be better than a podcast that someone's doing at a high school, you know, because you guys are professionals. Like,
as Jonah rubs his eye, yeah, I don't know.
No, but you have a responsibility to do a slightly elevated, you know, we should all give better content to the audience, I think.
I think it's also fun to, you know what you can inspire in sort of creating this, and not just aggregating, but also like a lot of stuff that you're creating is you are sort of inspiring other creators to go, oh, hey, you know, I could build on that, or what about this idea?
I hope everyone does their own thing and then uses Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and whatever the next one is that is getting created right now but we don't know about, to just shoot out, like, hey, here's an announcement. There's a place where I'm making content. Come there. It's, which is, you know, what you guys do. But just kind of, it feels to me like there are only three tweets, which is, this boring thing is happening to me, promoting something that I just did.
Right.
Or, I don't know. I just took a weird poop or something. You know, it's just
or all caps raging.
Yeah, just there's no kind of like, or saying something that you probably just shouldn't say publicly.
Right.
So like I think I don't know. It should be used as, people should really be thinking about this content. But we're probably in the Wild West in terms of social media.
Yeah, like that will. You know, well, I think we're in the Wild West of the sort of sociological effects of what's going to happen. You know, with a generation of people who live online publicly, and then, you know, don't really have to assume any responsibility for anything they say, or they're interfacing with a machine. I mean, as much as we're interconnected with the internet, it's also very isolating.
Yeah.
It's a very isolating medium because you're just like this most of the time. Or if you're in a room full of people and you don't know anyone, you're just on your, you know, you're on your phone and you're not actually interacting with the world. So, you know, I think it's fun to sort of create challenges that force people to interact with one another.
Yeah.
Next year, we should get you to come to No Pants Day.
What is that?
No Pants Day was...
By the way, already? I'm in.
Okay, what good. Is good. It's perfect. It just happened, but once a year... So this group, Improv Everywhere, have you seen Improv Everywhere's work?
Was this... Are they like UCB?
No, well,
the guy was from UCB.
So they basically... this guy started this thing called Improv Everywhere, and they're essentially these kind of like social sketch comedy experiments. So you'll... I'm telling you this now, and then later you'll go down a rabbit hole on YouTube. But so, like, for instance, they'll put like 10 of their troupe in a Starbucks, and then those people will do the same sequence of events over and over and over again, seemingly, like, if you just walked in, you wouldn't know that all those people know each other.
Oh, crazy.
And so it's basically
like
just...
flash mob.
It's kind of flash mob, but it's more, like,
it's
very,
very controlled and specific,
controlled.
And it's... And
this is on the internet? I can watch this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And so No Pants Day was one year, a large group of them got on the subway in, like, business suits and stuff, and then just underwear, like, no pants.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just sort of like watching the reactions of people try to wrap their brain around, like, well, why are there, is there something I don't know?
You know? And then people at other stops getting on also without
pants. That's cool.
Yeah, and so it became this sort of like this thing where once a year you get on, and they have it in Los Angeles where you get on at Union Station and you ride it into Hollywood Highlands.
I'm comfortable with full frontal if it calls, yes. if the project calls for it.
Yeah. One of the best things they did was, it's also one of the meanest ones, was Best Gig Ever, I think. Do you remember that one?
Oh, I heard about this.
Yeah. That's the same guys that did that, where they found a band on MySpace.
Right. And then they descended on them.
They, like, knew all the words.
Yeah,
to all
they were just wearing homemade shirts and come, and then, like, they just, right when they start playing, go and just, like, sing along to every song. Right when they're done, they all leave.
You know, though, I don't think that's mean. I think that sort of, I think that gives the...
it sounds like it's like oh, that kind of gives the band, like, it's like, oh, this is what it could be like. But then there was an interview with the guys afterwards on 60 Minutes or some kind of news program. The guys were just all really bummed out about it.
Right, you tasted the honey, but
It was more like you sniffed the honey. Like, here's some honey. Where is it, please? Yeah. Come back.
That's not for you.
Where are you going, honey? Do you ever want to do like live stuff at all?
Well, the screenings are going to be kind of our version of getting, and then I think we're going to tape some stuff there. So
cool.
Kind of people's reactions and stuff, because we're never going to be able to actually show any of these films.
Right.
I think we're going to show maybe kind of trailers.
Yeah.
But those are cool.
Interstellar. There was just a teaser trailer like maybe a month ago for Interstellar. Which is always a good sign when they start dropping teasers way before a movie comes out.
Yeah, and you know, I love teasers when they're... Actually, Matthew was in it, but when the Spielberg used to do those great teasers where there's not even footage from the film.
Yeah.
None of the actors. It's just a guy blowing off a piece of amber. You can tell I'm into this Amblin thing. But like, there's a little fly in it, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or, you know, the... There was like actually a great like Hook teaser where it was just a map. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then Hook happened.
And then, again, Mr. Spielberg, full respect.
Amazing. Listen, I could never have made that movie. On paper, it looked good.
I love the idea. You know, he's the right guy.
Robin Williams, great. Dustin Hoffman is Captain. Are you fucking kidding me? Hines. Of course. Yeah, Bob Hoskins, come on.
Rufio?
I mean,
Rufio.
Oh, shit.
But, yeah, that's right. Was that him dying?
Yeah.
Rufio, shit. You just stabbed me through.
Yeah.
But, I think... what I want to do is like just like promotion for stuff I'm in, but in a different way. And that I haven't figured out yet because I haven't been doing the site while I've been working on something. I was just thinking the other day, like, I just did this movie with Chris Evans early in the year, and he's a really, really funny guy.
Yeah, he's really funny.
And like, we should do one of those 50s, like, I'm now just wasting airtime.
No, not at all.
But, like, where, you know, where someone, like, looks to the camera and is like, oh, hello. Like, welcome to our set. You know, it's like filming.
Oh, like, right at the end of a scene.
Like, let me tell you something about my character. Yes. He's quite a dashing fellow. You know,
that stuff's a great idea because it breaks the norm of, you know, just the typical, like, here are the scenes from the movie. And those things that you're talking about are essentially, like... Their tone, it's what MTV used to do really, really, really well. Those image campaigns, the ones that broke Dennis Leary or Jimmy the Cab Driver or any of those ones.
It's content. What I don't like about someone taking a picture on Instagram of a film set they're on and they're at craft service, like, yo, first day of Interstellar. Yeah. Like, it doesn't, I don't know what that does. It's like your buddy is also, you know, texting you like, yo, first day of school.
Yeah, right. Like,
we should be giving better, you know, even in saying things, it should be better content. So I hope there's kind of a nice balance to that.
There is good. There is stuff that's been done like that before in the movie. Because I remember there was a, and it's always more exciting. And it's, you know, more like there was
teasers are that thing.
Yeah.
Which is, it's made especially just for.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There was an Ed Wood one where it's, you know, Johnny Depp in like the, you know, the Angora sweater and the wig. And like, he's like, hi, I'm Johnny Depp. I play Ed Wood in a movie called Ed Wood. And he's like in a meatpacking place. And like, he just kind of tells the story of it really weirdly as he's smoking a cigarette. Dude, it's just.
I gotta look that up.
But it's great.
I have a trailers section on the site. I'm so into trailers. Yeah.
Oh, you know who does? Who finds really good trailers is Joe Dante. If you like, yeah.
Who cuts good trailers? You mean?
No, like, he has Trailers from Hell.
Can you write that down too, bro? Kind of rip off part of that.
But Joe Dante has a site called Trailers from Hell where it's like he'll find old trailers, and then I think he has like directors, like big name directors, like recut old movie trailers or something.
Oh yeah, I did this Robert Rodriguez film, and he showed me trailers that he recut, and I hope the world sees these at some point.
Really?
He did like a Jaws trailer because he used the voice, you know, guy, like, he doesn't know, whatever, I don't know what he's saying.
Unstoppable Grindhouse killing machine. Style, yeah.
It was a Grindhouse trailer that Robert Rodriguez cut to Jaws.
Oh, perfect.
Maybe I can call him and he'll put it on my site or something, but it's like, oh my God, as he's talking, he used all the bloodiest parts of the movie. It was the craziest, like, Jaws. And then, like,
yeah,
you see that, who is it? Who's the...
Robert Shaw?
Yeah, who's Quint?
Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw, right. Yeah. him in the shark getting eaten. It's like, Jaws. It's terrifying.
Everything about going in that house. Don't.
Well, you saw.
Yeah, it was just like that.
You saw those recut trailers for like Shining and Mary Poppins.
Oh, I love that too. That's all on the site. Like, that's all the stuff I want to.
There's a really great. I don't know if you're on Reddit at all, but Reddit.
I'm not on Reddit. I'm almost scared of Reddit.
But no, it's fine.
Maybe
it's fine.
I'll get on it.
It's fine because you basically. It's, you know, the beauty, the real secret sauce to Reddit is in the really obscure subreddits. Not the main. I mean, like, the main ones can be fine, like Pix, Funny, Gaming, whatever.
Right.
But then you start finding these really specific ones that are. So there's one that's Obscure Media, which is r/Obscure Media, and people find the fucking craziest old shit that you'd like. Someone posted the entire Spider-Man TV movie from the 70s.
Oh.
That's like narrated by Stan Lee.
That's awesome.
And so, or they'll find like old commercials or like there's, you know, I found this like really insane, it's totally psychedelic Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial from like 1965.
What was that for?
It was for Kentucky Fried Chicken. Like someone.
I thought you meant the Kentucky Fried movie.
No. Oh God. Fucking Kentucky Fried movie was.
Is that Gandhi?
No. That was UHF. Weird Al's movie. Yeah, but I think Reddit has a lot of trenches that will satisfy things that you like. I think you will learn to love it.
I think this is my way of wanting to say hello, and this is me, and not go into it. I just want to, I liked when we were working on 70's Show, when I'd never acted before that. I had a weird thing where someone saw me in like a high school play.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that was my first audition. I had no idea. And like, I liked when we started it because I didn't know anything about entertainment. I mean, I'd been in like one high school play, and I thought, this is great because we work all week to do 22 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I hate these like selfies so much. Is you go like, how much work did you put into that? Like, it'd be cool if you did a selfie with, you know, I don't know, whatever, some kind of illustration, or you got people together. I mean, there's a way to make it great content.
Sure,
but great content could come in every different form. But I want to, if I am shooting out a thing every day on Twitter or Facebook, I want it to be something that when people go, what you're talking about, you know, it's like, oh shit, that's like an hour of fun, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good reason to do anything, and that's a good place to come from. And so people should go. It's serialprize.com.
Yeah.
And by the way, when you first came on Twitter, my girlfriend was delighted. You tweeted at my girlfriend, and she was delighted.
Oh, did I?
Yes.
I don't think I even knew that.
Yeah. What's up with that, bro?
Cool. She was like, "Ooh, Topher Gracie tweeted at me."
I think I answered everyone for like a day. That was like one thing.
No. Let her think it was special.
No, she and I have kept in close contact.
Oh shit,
sweet girl.
What?
I don't. That feels.
You
take that?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. I'm gonna take it. He's charming. I'm going to take it. Until that 70s show, I'd never heard the iteration Topher of my name except for Will Wheaton used to date this girl when we were in college, and she called me Toph because she said, like, everyone calls you Chris. Like, she wanted it to be...
Oh, as a Christopher, you'd never heard that.
No one had ever... And so in college, I was like... You're blowing my shit up. Like, I just had never occurred
you
to me.
Like it?
I loved it, but it had never occurred to me that, you could just
abbreviate
the other side of the name.
Yeah.
That was because when I went to boarding school, I think a lot of people think it's like an acting name or something, but when I went to boarding school, which I went young, I was like 13 when I went to boarding school, and the hottest girl in school, first of all, my mom is a Patricia trapped in a Pat, so she was pushing Christopher on me, and I think didn't fully realize that Chris Grace... Like, when abbreviated doesn't sound as good as Christopher Grace. Like, I'll say, hey, like, what's that name under? And I'll say Grace. And they'll be like, Chris? I'll go, no, Chris. So when I got to school, I thought, I want to really be called Christopher here. And then the hottest girl in school, like, during orientation was like, you should go by Topher. And I was like, done.
That is a great idea.
That was it. So thank you to... You know who you are. I'm sure she's listening to The Nerdist.
Yes. And if you're still hot...
She might be... Thanks.
Thanks, bro. Hey, bro.
It was really good to see you.
It was a pleasure, man. Thank you for letting me come
on. Back anytime. And if you ever want to pop on the At Midnight show and do anything and fuck around, you're certainly welcome to do so.
That show's great, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's going great, right? You got renewed, right?
It is, yeah.
Fantastic,
we got picked up for the year. We're doing like 40 weeks. So it's been fun. It's been insane. It's fun, and again, it sort of reinforces the idea that I think one of the great, I mean, there are many gifts that you should strive for in this life, but one of them is to work on things that you actually care about, which you don't really, doesn't really occur to you when you're young, because maybe more now because of the internet and people have the tools to take their own destinies into their own hands, but it really is like it is the best thing in the world to be like, not only do I enjoy doing what I'm doing, but I'm proud of it.
Endless gasoline to do it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't ever have to fill up again because you love what you're doing, right?
Yeah. I think the first, 13 years of my career was, there was always a but after I would say what I was working on. Like, we're going to sing. But, you know, I mean, it's like, it's not for everyone. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, a dating show, but it's like, it's silly. You know, like, I always felt like there was a disclaimer afterwards.
Yeah. I've been to that party, sure.
Well, hopefully, I wish you the best, and that you don't ever have to be at that party again.
Thank you, constantly. Thank you, man.
Is there anything else you want to say or announce or talk about?
No, I just
anything
really
else?
Had a lot of fun. Thank you guys
cool.
for having me.
Thanks, Topher Grace. Right. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Reyes Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.